Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the All Stats Aren't We review of the Arsenal away game and a preview of the Chelsea home game. I'm Darren Driver. Don't pass the ball back to me, it'll only end in disaster. And I'm here with the note down Dan James Pants of the podcast, John McKenzie. No one knows what's on it and you can't tell by watching. And finally, the Rafinha being sick of everyone's shit of the podcast, almost going full Mad Max Gradle, it's Adam Elliott. Adam, how you doing, buddy?
Well, my team are on the brink of relegation and I might have COVID. So I've had better weeks, but otherwise I'm okay. How about yourself, Darren? How are you?
My team are almost on the verge of relegation and I don't have COVID. So I suppose I'm one step up the ladder from where you are there, Adam, which is a nice place to be. I'll let you take the misery spot this week. I'm going to be nice and cheerful. John, how are you doing, buddy?
Yeah, my team are also on the brink of relegation. Weird, eh?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Heading down to London later, so getting away from the parochialness of South Cheshire and finding my way to the Big Smoke. So yeah, it'll be nice to meet a few friends when I'm down there. So yeah, I'm pretty positive. Pretending football doesn't exist right now.
That's a good idea, like Dick Whittington.
That's right, to make my fortune in London.
Okay, excellent. So this is a double header episode. So we'll be reviewing the Arsenal game and we'll be previewing the Chelsea fixture at Elland Road on Wednesday. So as is tradition, I'm going to hand over to John for the pared down review of the Arsenal game.
So it is, in fact, the 2-1 loss to Arsenal at the Emirates that we're talking about today. I've just had a little gander over at FB Ref and the XG numbers were not kind to us. They had Arsenal putting up 2.9 XG, so just under 3, and ourselves getting 0.5 XG from a mere 3 chances, which obviously is not ideal. We'll do what we usually do, so 5 questions interspersed with a few listener questions as well. So I'll kick off with a question for Darren. So only losing 2-1 away from home to a top 6 side when down to 10 men for the majority. Doesn't look too bad on paper, but in reality, was it a good performance, Darren?
As Howard Wilkinson was very fond of saying, paper teams win paper cups. And no, I don't think it was a good performance is the fundamental answer to that. I suppose it depends what you mean by good. So what I can say is that in the second half particularly, the team dug in and I guess were able to stay in the game to such a point whereby, you know, scoring from a set piece at the end might make a difference to the game, and I suppose that's commendable. I didn't see any evidence of anything that I like to see on a football pitch working. So I didn't see any huge evidence of any attacking process, but albeit there was very little attacking intent shown by the team. And for all that people have been saying that we defended well, we conceded nearly 3 goals of XG and Arsenal had numerous really good chances to put the game, you know, to bed much earlier than they did. So, you know, for all that there's a relief that it didn't turn into a 5-6-7 game, which it looked like it had the potential to do in those first 10 minutes, I don't think this gets anywhere near what I would call good. on any level. So that's how I feel about it anyway.
Yeah, and Adam, Jesse Marsh has made a big thing about mentality and positivity to get us through this relegation battle. How do you explain Sunday's head loss with all that as the background? Because I do think that adds another layer to the conversation, really.
I can't fully explain why. You know, you've got one of your most senior pros, you know, the captain on the day, and he might never play a Premier League football game again now. That might be him done. It doesn't make sense why he's lost his head in that way. But it wasn't just Ayling, was it? I think we were kind of all over the place to begin with. Before he even got sent off, we were two goals down. So it was a collective, wasn't it? But the only explanation I have for that is that maybe it's a lot of the senior group have now fallen to injury or suspension. And Marsh has discussed this leadership group that he has. And we had Rodrigo on the bench. He's one of them. We had Cooper out. We had Dallas out. We had Forshaw out. Possibly Patrick Bamford as well is part of that group. So is there a lack of seniority? And for me, I don't think that's super important, but it maybe is somewhat important. But it's not the main explanation for why we lost that game yesterday. And I did expect us to lose it either way, really. It was our hardest remaining game. And as soon as it went to even 1-0, it did just feel like it was a loss for me personally. And is that what the players are now feeling when they're out on the pitch? If you looked at Ilan Meslier, he looked absolutely crestfallen at his mistake. And I don't know if he ever fully recovered from that. I mean, he didn't have to make too many saves in the game, and he didn't look too flustered when he did, besides maybe a couple of corners that he came for that he didn't quite reach. But I'm talking about the other players as well here, where it just felt like maybe they'd maybe given up until the second half. And like Darren said, we managed to stay in the game and fight back a little bit. But yeah, we needed Ayling and players like him for the running, and we now don't have him. And I don't know how important that's going to be, but it could be. We now have a similar sort of fixture list to Burnley in terms of the difficulty. And we're now on the same points. So it's a straight shootout. It's whoever blinks. And at the moment, it looks like it's us.
Just because it's not working tactically, it feels to me at the moment like Marsh is trying to replace tactics with intensity and with effort and aggression. And I think that answers a lot of why we're playing in the way that we're doing, why we're picking up so many yellow cards, and why Ayling might have felt compelled to go flying in for that tackle in the corner. You know, I do think that there's definitely a tactical element to this as well. And sorry, John, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was going to simply ask you whether or not if Jesse Marsh makes his big thing to be the mentality on the field and talks about that a lot, maybe sometimes to the detriment of any sort of tactical discussion, whether or not you are in a situation where I suppose that you're on a fine line, aren't you, between getting the most out of the team and then things going wrong. And as soon as things don't go right, then I think that intensity very quickly starts being directed towards the wrong end. And it felt a little bit like that was what happened in the first half of the first half yesterday. It looked like Rafinha was just hell-bent on getting sent off himself. Mateus Klich did his almost obligatory jump in on someone because you're frustrated. And obviously, Luke Ayling is maybe the surprise element there because you just don't expect that from him. But in terms of the fact that Marsh has sort of ramped up this being like a mentality thing, that it's going to be mentality that gets us through this, are games like Sunday's game against Arsenal like examples of why actually you have to be super careful when you make mentality everything?
Well, absolutely, because you know what that mentality is that it means that you're playing right on the edge all the time. And you know, this is a squad which in various ways has played on the edge for 4 years in different ways. You know, whether it's on the edge of having enough personnel, whether it's on the edge, you know, and the amount of risks that we used to take in possession, risks through the man marking. And now it seems that the risks are, let's see how far we can push that aggression, that mentality, that hard work, and see whether that alone can get us through. And I think it's pretty clear that when that comes up short, as it's going to do against a very good Arsenal team, as it's going to do against a very good City team, as it's likely to do against a good Chelsea team, then what you're left with, all you're left with, is kind of people getting frustrated and feeling that systemically it's going wrong, and because there are no systemic answers, that only leads to further frustrations.
Yeah, we could talk about this a lot, I think, but it was a similar run of poor fixtures that led to Bielsa's demise as well, and a lot of the conversation we had about that was that the team had lost faith in the manager. And I think maybe a similar phenomenon there, which is, you know, when you do ramp up things to such an extent for these games and then lose them, you feel as though the process isn't working. And then you start having those doubts coming in. But let's move on and talk about maybe some more of the tangibles from the game as well. So Adam, we talked a lot about the possible structures that Leeds would adopt in this game. In the end, we went for the 4-2-3-1 over the 3-4-3, which was the big conversation topic of the week. Although we did go back to a back five again as soon as the red card came, essentially. So what did you make of the structure in the game, Adam?
Yeah, I had already highlighted before the game, Llorente as a possible issue at left centre-back. And in my opinion, if Pascal Strauch or Liam Cooper's available, if we have one of those left-footed options, we should play them. He had difficulty switching from right centre-back to left centre-back in Spain, and that was pretty well documented. So I don't really understand that as the very first point. I also didn't understand Dan James starting as a number 10. I don't think his skill set is at all suited for that position. So in terms of the 4-2-3-1, it just didn't look like it had the functionality that it should. Another one is Joe Gelhart. I think he's a pretty decent striker in a two, or as a sort of withdrawn striker next to a more physical, combative option in front of him. But instead, he's being asked to lead the line almost on his own when he's, you know, mobility is okay, but it's not super fast. And his frame's fairly stocky and strong, but he's not the strongest because he's not that tall either. He's not that good aerially. I know we saw a good header one against Norwich, but just a lot of things that didn't make sense for me in that lineup. Even though we have injuries and maybe a hand is not quite what it should be, it still feels like we're doing a bit of the sort of square pegs in round holes thing that we saw under Bielsa. If I'm scrambling for positives, we looked a bit better in the five with 10 men in terms of the pressing, but they were still able to get around us at times. And I think Dan James suited the right wing back role, which is essentially when you're down to 10 men, just a pressing role where you just need to work the line. And I thought he did okay in that structure, but we at least looked more solid, in my opinion, with 10 men, but that's probably because we were forced to sort of dig in and hang it on in there for as long as possible and restrict them. But yeah, when it was 11v11, 4-2-3-1, it was just all over the place, and Arsenal were making chances for fun around us.
Darren, thoughts on this?
I agree to a degree with Adam that we did look better once we went into a low block, but I don't think it's that hard to like look pretty decent at low blocking. I don't really think that's a particularly commendable thing. And I mean, I'm not talking about a kind of philosophy thing there. Like, I just think, you know, you can, any set of professional footballers worth the salt should be able to organise a low block on the edge of the penalty area, and that's what we did. So, you know, and you know, there's a phenomenon whereby we go a number of goals down and then we have our best spell of the game, and like, I just think it's just so like frustrating and pointless to even say that, because obviously if a team's 2-0 up against 10 men, they're not going to take any risks. They're going to be a bit more measured in their approach, and that will allow a little bit more space occasionally for us to get back in the game. But against City, you know, we had a decent spell at 3-0 down, and we had a decent spell against Arsenal at 2-0 down. Well, the game's already lost at that point, and I just you know, I kind of don't buy into that as a narrative at all. And structurally, I agree. We were pretty messy in the 4-2-3-1. We looked very ragged, easy to move around. Arsenal were able to create space and chances for fun. And it's only because we sat in a low block in the second half and the fact that they stepped off a bit that they were a little bit less able to do that in the second half.
Yeah, and I think on top of that, there were only three chances created in the game for us. So obviously your ability to defend is an important aspect of the game, but you have to generate chances as well, and we only generated three, and two of those were in the final 5 minutes or so, if not later. All three of those chances were generated from set pieces, and this was the lowest total chances created this season, and of the 12 games this season where we've created the fewest chances, five of them have been under Jesse Marsh. I'm not going to ask you if you're worried about this, because obviously it is worrying, but do you think we're getting worse in possession under Jesse Marsh, Darren?
Undoubtedly. I think we're undoubtedly getting worse in possession. We've moved from a situation where we were playing more of a hybrid system, so we were moving the ball out wide, and I still wonder if it was just the players doing that, because that's the stuff they knew and that's where the space was. And now I think we've stopped doing that quite so much, and it hasn't been replaced by anything. So, you know, we constantly turn possession over, and our counter press isn't good enough to kind of recover the ball from those turnovers. We look distinctly unable to progress the ball in any meaningful way into dangerous areas through kind of movement or interchange, or by kind of moving the ball smartly. When we try and move the ball more directly, the passes are there are quite often going into touch or directly to an opponent, and there just isn't, you know, there isn't the kind of target or the structure in the front areas of the team to kind of to get the ball to. So I think, you know, there have been a couple of times against City and a couple of times again yesterday when we were able to put together maybe three or four passes in the back section of the team, but, you know, so what, who cares? Like that's not going to get us anywhere near where we need to be in order to create chances. So I'm desperately worried about our chance creation. I'm desperately worried about the lack of threat coming from the team. And yet people will say the caveat is that we played against City and Arsenal, and that it is difficult to create chances against those two teams. But in the 3-0 win against Watford, which we got absolute pelters for saying that we were bad in possession in that game and barely created anything, we were the same in that game as we were yesterday. So I do think it's declining, and I don't see any evidence that it's going to turn around.
Yeah, Adam, we had a question from Al Barker who said, how are we going to pass the ball to each other once the memory of Bielsa's patterns fade from these players' memories? Do you think that's a legitimate concern?
Yeah, I actually do, because Marsh simply isn't fussed about a structured build-up in possession. He's not really been about that throughout his managerial career, so I don't see why that will change now. Al mentioned in the same tweet that there was a sort of sequence of passing around 35 to 38 minutes into the game, and that it felt like an echo of the past, and that was totally spot on. That's not something we've seen a lot of at all, and I kind of echo exactly what Darren's saying, and that we haven't really done it against many teams at all, full stop, under Marsh, really, apart from maybe Leicester and Norwich, have we ever looked like, sort of fairly competent with the ball. So even against Watford, it was a problem, and I don't really see how we're going to now suddenly trend upwards in this regard. It seems to be only a downward spiral in that sense. Again, though, I think that playing those players in positions like Dan James as a 10 is a problem. You have other options like Rodrigo. I know he wasn't great last time out against Man City. Sorry, he wasn't great last time out against Man City. But at least he's a better option there. And yet we seem to think that Dan James was a better choice. So for me, I'm losing a bit of patience, because if you have other better choices for the structure that you've built, why not play them? Why are we playing two right-footed centre-backs where we could play a left and a right? Why are we playing Dan James as a 10 where we could play Rodrigo? Why not play, you know, other options? For example, Dan James could be back up front instead of Joe Gelhart, especially if you're playing Arsenal, and they're going to be high up pressing us. You might have some space in behind. I'm not a huge fan of Dan James as a striker, but it's another option, isn't it? For me, it just doesn't make sense, and it all is a collective reasoning for why we can't build up at all well. It's not just Marsh ball, it's also the personnel he's picking don't necessarily make sense either.
And I think this is complexified by the fact that our best progressor of the ball won't be playing at all in the last three games, because he's now suspended. So I think that makes me even more worried about our ability to progress the ball and move it upfield in any sort of structure.
But Ayling was best at progressing the ball when he played as a centre-back, and he's not even been playing there, Darren. So it's still not even fixed when he's out, because if he was available, we're not even playing him in the best position that he showed his capabilities of in Marsh ball.
No, system. But I think he's still our best progressive player, even at right back. I still think he's that player. So anyway, yeah, you're right, he's not playing, so it's irrelevant.
Is it worth maybe talking a little bit about the fact that fans were adamant that Bielsa should play more defensively in the games against the top six, and we've done that in the last couple of games and we've lost both of them? Is that a lesson to be learned? Do we think that losing more narrowly and maybe looking more impressive in a low block than getting shelled by a top six side is that different? What's the take on that?
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm happy we only lost 2-1, and if you'd said that we would before the game, I honestly wouldn't have been too disheartened as long as the performance was good. I'm actually now at a point where I'm more disheartened at the level of the performance, and sitting in a low block and trying to soak up pressure and trying to counter them is great if it works, but we still ended up losing and we still looked absolutely woeful in possession. So although I've been results over performances all season, well, recently anyway, now I'm very much like, well, if we're going to lose, can we at least look somewhat good? And we didn't yesterday. So the payoff is maybe, yeah, we're not getting absolutely hammered every time now, but we still need to pick up points, and we're going into a tough game next game as well, and I just don't know how it's going
to
look.
The opposition are still creating chances, enough chances to give us a shelling, and we're not making any. So I don't see that as a tangible improvement at all.
Before the Ayling sending off, there were a few instances where Arsenal played quite comfortably through our press. Darren, do you worry that Premier League players are too good to be really troubled by our intense counter-pressing?
I'm a little bit less convinced by this. I think against very good teams like Arsenal, like City, you know, potentially Chelsea, then I think that trying to get involved in an intense counter press might be a bit of a fool's errand, because they're just going to move you around and move the ball around. And we saw plenty of times yesterday when Arsenal did that, and once City got settled last week, they were able to do that too. I think there is still, you know, when you're up against mid-table or lower teams, I think there's still a value in it. When you're up against teams of a similar ability to your own team, I think there is a value in it. But I just, yeah, I think that you know, Arteta and Guardiola and, you know, Klopp and their players are just too good to be troubled by a pressing system like ours. And you know, whether it's because, you know, Marsh still hasn't fully integrated what he wants and the team is still not quite doing what he wants them to do, or whether it's just not going to work anyway, I don't know. I mean, Southampton have a very mixed success, don't they? They, you know, if you look at Southampton as a correlate, they have very mixed success. So they have spells where they look good and their pressing works really effectively and they cause teams lots of problems. But then they also take fairly regular shellings against teams where it just doesn't work at all, and where the sort of problems that we're talking about here just come out. So I think maybe a more mixed approach, might be valuable, but I just don't know. John is the answer. I it didn't work yesterday and it didn't work against City, so that's all you can take from it, really.
It's interesting you mentioned the sort of XG we're giving up against these big teams still, and like, well, that's not changed, Darren, in the last question. But even against teams like Palace, we gave up so much XG, like it wasn't any different. So I don't necessarily agree that it always works against sort of the middling teams. It maybe has more effectiveness, but we can still look absolutely woeful against those teams as well. And Palace is maybe the shining example of that. But with regards to the question, John, well, in the Bundesliga, there's much more intensity on and emphasis on the pressing rather than the technical sort of side of things. Not that there isn't a lot of good technical players in the Bundesliga, but it isn't as technical as the Premier League. So maybe that also is a reason why it's had more effectiveness in Germany, not just Germany, but in other, you know, Eastern European leagues. It's maybe seen more success than in the Premier League, where, yeah, the technical quality of players is a lot higher and they can just play through you. I think you had a really good point that you made on Twitter yesterday about how Tomiyasu was sort of allowed to be quite free, and the way Arteta used him in their possession build-up. And I know that was kind of helped by us being down to 10 men, but did you want to talk about that, John?
Yeah, Tomiyasu, I thought, was used quite interestingly when we went down to 10. And I made the point on Twitter that I think that it's always tough for managers to respond to going down to 10. We saw that last season with Pep Guardiola failing to beat us when we went down to 10 against City. And I think that there's always the possibility that because these teams are just not used to playing against teams sitting in and bedding down, and the change up and in the in the game state with a player less on the pitch. I thought Arteta did a really good job of exposing the space that Leeds had to leave by going 5-3-1, and making sure that Tomiyasu was in really dangerous situations. And I felt as though that they were able to sort of manipulate us on that left hand side, or on their left hand side, quite well. They generated quite a few chances through that area, and then they had on the other side, they had Saka, Odegaard, and Cedric all playing, I guess, on the wider side, overloading on that side and dragging the Leeds team across over onto that side, and just sort of leaving Tomiyasu with a lot of space around him where he could almost play like a bit of a playmaker. We've seen João Cancelo do that for Manchester City, but I felt that this was slightly different insofar as because it was an extended period of pressure from Arsenal for the most part, with us bunkering down. It was just quite interesting seeing him being used in that way, up against that low block, and I felt as though it actually caused a lot of problems. We've just seen this weekend Liverpool play against Spurs, and Spurs sat in a very deep low block and looked to counter-attack from there. And Liverpool had no ideas, really, I didn't think, of how to break down that Spurs block. So I was impressed with Arteta's ability to really manipulate space in a situation where the opposition are in an unusual structure, I suppose.
Yeah, and the only counter I really have to that yesterday is that we were down to 10 and it gives them a free man on the other side. But, and I'm not advocating for man marking, but it does feel like if we press and squeeze over to one side and compact the space down one side, that there's always going to be that free man. Maybe with 11, it's not quite as free. But like you said, with Tomiyasu, the way he pushed up yesterday when the ball was on Cedric's side, he was able to have so much space to almost act like a playmaker. And I think when teams realise that they can do this more and more, that's where we're going to see problems. And that's not just against the top sides. I think this is a problem against every team that plays with a little bit more width, and that has decent technical quality. You don't have to be super good. But yeah, the Premier League is full of good technical players compared to other leagues. It is probably the strongest league in the world. So maybe RB football doesn't really suit the league, and maybe that is true, and maybe this is the way that teams are going to end up killing us long term. And we've discussed this before, but it was really highlighted for me yesterday seeing how much space Tomiyasu had.
It's worth saying with respect to the Bundesliga that actually the Red Bull style seems to be not working so well now as well, and there's any number of reasons why that could be the case. Obviously, there's been much higher exposure by oppositions to high pressing football in the Bundesliga, so maybe they're just better at countering it. I also think that the inequality of the league is slowly being narrowed. Obviously, no one gets anywhere near Bayern, but I think that teams towards the bottom of the table are actually much better technically than they used to be. So we've seen already Jesse Marsch not really work at RB Leipzig. Marco Rose, who is the Dortmund manager, has struggled this season playing again a sort of intense form of pressing football as well. So it could be the case that as leagues become more technically adept, that they struggle, that pressing teams will struggle a little bit more. But I mean, that is very speculative on my part. But let's just finish up with one more question. So over to you, Adam, on what do we see going forward from here? So Nick Dunbar said, do you see 3-4-2-1 formation as we have no fullbacks now? I'd play James and Harrison as the wide players of the four, Rafinha and Rodrigo behind Joffe or Bamford, Phillips and Bate? So yeah, what's your thoughts on where we go, what we look like going forward?
Well, we only have three games left, so we might see different formations used in these three games. And in general, I'm fine with either 4-2-3-1 or sort of 3-4-3, 3-4-2-1, whatever you want to call that. I'm okay with both, and I think we might see both, but I think it is opposition dependent. And we're going to talk about Chelsea in a little bit, but for example, I wouldn't necessarily do it against them because of the way that would then lead to sort of matchups all over the pitch. So you'd have a lot of 1v1s, and it could look a little bit like man marking in that sense, because they can press onto us in the 3-4-3, and their wing backs can pin onto our full backs. Their wide forwards can push it right on the centre backs, and they can just press us into oblivion if we do that. Whereas in a 4-2-3-1, I think you have a bit more of a get out. And I know that we're not necessarily going to be building out like we have under Bielsa, and it might look a bit different to the last times we played Chelsea. So that might lend itself to us a little bit. But at the same time, I think that we shouldn't necessarily get too carried away with this being the option against just all the big teams. I think it's certainly a sort of maybe against City it works, but not against Chelsea. I wouldn't do it. I would go back to the 4-2-2-2 or the 4-2-3-1 personally, but then maybe against Brighton or Brentford it might be an option again. We'll see.
I genuinely don't know. I suppose, it really does depend on what you're hoping to get out of the game and what you're hoping to achieve. And if what you're hoping to achieve is just getting away without taking a shell in, then, by all means, set up on the edge of the box and try and scab a point. If you want to do something a bit more proactive than that, and I do think we're going to need to win at least one of these games, one of these three remaining games, in order to secure our place in the division for next year, then you're going to need to do something a bit more proactive and be the protagonist. And I'm not sure which formation lends itself best to that, or whether this is more about what Marsh does when he's got the ball, irrespective of the formation. I think you can get a bit too deeply involved in formations as a thing, because it is about the principles of how we play, and the principles that Marsh has are the same, irrespective of what the shape of the team is.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of the interrogation. So we will spend the rest of our time now talking about the Chelsea game on Wednesday. So Darren, over to you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So this week, John spoke to Orlando Valman of the Chelsea Spot about, Chelsea.
So Orlando, hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you very much for having me on again. I'm looking forward to it. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well, and it's great to have you back on. Always good to talk to you about Chelsea, but what a bizarre season it's been for Chelsea, right?
Yeah, it has been a really weird one. I think the stage of the season we're at now for Chelsea, it does seem like things are kind of petering out quite a bit. I'm not sure how representative of the wider fan opinion I am, but I think I'm personally somewhat ambivalent about the rest of the Premier League season. I think the games don't really matter that much anymore. We would have to majorly mess it up not to get top four at this stage. Whether we get third or fourth makes no difference, doesn't matter at all. Obviously, there's the FA Cup final, which I don't like the fact that one game of 90 minutes will determine whether this season is deemed a success or a failure. I think that's quite disingenuous, but that is probably what's going to be the case. So obviously it would be nice to win that, but I think I think a lot of the reasons for Chelsea not maybe having been as good or as competitive as people predicted at the start of the season are no one's really to blame. There have been quite a lot of injuries. There's obviously been the whole kind of ownership thing, but there are also problems that we can kind of say we could have done better there, but we'll get into that a bit later, I think.
And we do have to just talk about that ownership issue that has been rumbling on. There's just been a press release made about 10 minutes ago, I think, where Roman Abramovich was just clarifying a few points of gossip that have been going around the rumor mills. But what's it like from your side of the fan owner divide? What's it like to be in this situation where there's uncertainty about who your owners will be in the future?
Well, yeah, it's a bit strange. Obviously the first thing to say is that it is absolutely a good thing that Roman Abramovich was sanctioned by the UK government. And no matter whether he's financed loads of success for your football club, or you have no kind of relationship with him at all, or you know nothing about him, it is a good thing, and football should take a back seat in these kind of things, and I hope everyone agrees on that, because there are a lot of Chelsea fans on Twitter who seem not to, but yeah, from a fan perspective, I guess there's a lot of just kind of sitting, hoping and praying that the next owner isn't really dodgy, because when you're talking about billionaires, that is often the case. But it does seem like the guy who's most likely to get it at this point, Todd Boehly and his consortium, don't have that much dodginess around them. I mean, I think there is kind of inevitably something to kind of criticize with every sort of potential owner, but I think I'm relatively happy with the way the kind of bidding process has panned out given who some of the potential owners were at different stages of it.
Yeah, and in terms of the on-field stuff then, how much of an impact do you think that ongoing issue with the ownership has had?
Well, it's hard to really pinpoint, because there are lots of things that have happened on field that it's unclear what the kind of exact reasons for are. So you could put it down to injuries, you could put it down to fatigue, you could put it down to poor tactics, poor execution, whatever you want to say. But I think it is pretty clear that the kind of whole uncertainty has played into things a little bit. I think there's just been a lot more inconsistency in terms of performances. I'm not so sure if that's been seen exactly as it maybe could have been in the results, but I think certainly in terms of the performances, it's been for sure the most inconsistent period since Thomas Tuchel has come in. So yeah, I think it has played into things in that sense. But at the same time, I mean, this is the cliche that the footballers always use in the interviews, but I think it is true that they are footballers and they are there just to play football, and I don't think they really care who's paying their wages. So I think to say that it is the reason for Chelsea's poor form or whatever is reaching a bit.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Thomas Tuchel, because there was obviously a lot of hype around him when he came in. You got that Champions League very early on when he arrived at the club. It does seem to have petered out a little bit, I think was a phrase that you used. Why do you think that's been the case?
Well, I do think the main reason is just injuries to key players and also poor, let's say, allocation of funds from the Chelsea board, from whoever's in charge of transfers and outgoing transfers as well. Because it's not just after we won the Champions League, but also after our start to this season. It seems like ages ago, but we were absolutely flying at the start of the season. Both wing-backs were kind of scoring or assisting every game, and that includes Ben Chilwell, who obviously got that ACL injury, and that was hugely influential in Chelsea's kind of slight regression, I'd say. I mean, we went to Anfield and we drew 1-1 despite receiving a red card to Reece James in the 45th minute. We smashed Juventus 3-0 in the Champions League group stages. We were looking really, really good. There have been about five different injuries to N'Golo Kante. Well, everyone seems to have forgotten it now, but Lukaku started the season really, really well. There didn't look like there would be any bedding in problems. And then he got that ankle injury. He was out for, I think, about 6 weeks. And then since he's come back from that, he's just not really done anything. Yeah, I think injuries are a big reason why that kind of hype around Tuchel has calmed. But yeah, I mean, it's easy to say with hindsight that the Lukaku signing was not the brightest one. I think a lot of fans at the time got caught up with the fact that it was Lukaku. And I think, I remember myself saying it's certainly dumb to spend 100 million on any player, especially of his age, especially a striker, which Chelsea didn't really need. But because I love Lukaku so much, because Chelsea have a lot of money anyway, I don't really care. And that was probably not the brightest attitude to take. But yeah, I mean, I'm always going to say this, and people who know me will know that, but I think the problem wasn't so much buying Lukaku, it was selling Tammy Abraham. And I think, and that's not something that I'm using hindsight to say. I mean, I was saying that at the time. And I think then that you can put down to an error from Tuchel. And I think that is the one point that I would criticize Tuchel on most, is his kind of talent ID, if that's the sort of right phrase to use. I think he, both in his team selection and his kind of the way he uses his squad, could have been better.
Let's talk about those forward options then, because obviously you spent a lot of money over the past few seasons. You brought in Timo Werner, Kai Havertz, and as you mentioned, Romelu Lukaku. And that feels like the broadest sort of skill set of strikers you could really want to have available to you. So I guess that for me makes it all the more complex, this idea that it hasn't really felt like Chelsea have really been firing as an attacking force this season. So do you have any thoughts on why it is the case that you have three different, very different types of strikers and yet none of them really seem to have thrived under Tuchel?
Well, I think the first thing to say, I think a lot of Chelsea fans don't like to admit this, but I think it is true that the system that Tuchel has been playing for the most part with us is not very kind to the striker. And I mean, as you say, if none of these guys are thriving, who really is going to thrive? I think Kai Havertz has done very well for the most part this season. I think he's definitely been the best out of the three. And it's easy to forget that he's only 22. I mean, he's younger than Mason Mount. And I think a lot of people don't realise that because he was playing from such a young age at Bayer Leverkusen and so on, and just, I guess he plays quite maturely, I think. So people often don't realise how young he is. But I think, yeah, that was also one of the reasons why I really thought we didn't need to sign a striker in the summer. Although the kind of whole media narrative was, oh, Chelsea is so good under Tuchel. When they get a striker, they'll be Premier League contenders or whatever. Everyone was saying, so good, but they need a striker because they miss all these chances or because they only win games 1-0 or whatever. But we had Kai Havertz, who was not doing as well as he's done this season, but very much showing promise and showing like seeming like he's the type of player to kind of succeed in this sort of setup. We had Tammy Abraham, who was, I think, our highest goal scorer last season, despite basically not playing at all from January, mid-January onwards. And then you also had, of course, Timo Werner, who, despite being very, very frustrating a lot of the time, is undoubtedly a useful weapon to stretch certain defences. And yeah, it is a little bit of a mystery that no one has really thrived. I think another big reason is that there's been a lot of chopping and changing, not just in the striker position, but also in the forward positions around them. The only real mainstay in the team has been Mason Mount in that front three, and Kai Havertz recently. So I think, yeah, there needs to be a lot more consistency. I think that is somewhat pin that on Tuchel, but it's also very understandable given that, yeah, none of our forwards really have been firing this season, and I think that is to a large extent down to them. I mean, I'm his biggest fanboy, but there was a period when Callum Hudson-Odoi was doing really well and he was starting every game on the left wing for about an 8-game run. And that was the first time it looked like we were finding some consistency. I think we were unbeaten in that period. And then he's basically been injured ever since. And that was, I think, January, February time. It is frustrating, but I think it's also not necessarily as big a problem as some people like to make out, given how strong we are defensively.
Yeah, and you mentioned at the beginning of the season there were people talking about Chelsea maybe putting on form good enough to challenge at the top. And so you're looking at the underlying numbers, it just seems as though you're a long way behind City and Liverpool. So City have put up 17 XG more than you this season. Liverpool have put up 20 XG more than you. We've talked to you, I think you mentioned earlier, just a little bit about the system as well. You've played the 3-4-3 a lot this season, although outside of that, your go-to formation seems to be a 4-3-3, but it's mainly the 3-4-3. And this has allowed you to be fairly defensively sound. And we knew that last season, everyone was saying, you know, Thomas Tuchel's come in, sorted out the defence. But as you mentioned, there was always this talk of, well, once they get going in an attacking sense, they're going to be a real force to contend with, and that just hasn't really happened. So to what extent do you think that structure, that 3-4-3 has actually contributed to this? Because it feels to me like Chelsea are really good at progressing the ball to the final third, and then you just look very uncreative and uninventive in the final third.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think you used the phrase there that a lot of people were saying, oh, when Chelsea get going in attacking sense, they're going to be, you know, kind of a force to be reckoned with. And I think that was never really something that was ever going to be true. I think you're totally right that this structure is very much a defense first one. And I think that's fine. I think being 17 XG behind City and 20 XG behind Liverpool is not necessarily a huge problem if you are this strong defensively. I don't have the numbers to hand, but I'm sure at least last season, our defense was the strongest in Europe, I think, let alone in the Premier League. What I would say is it did look like things were somewhat starting to click at the start of the season, as I previously mentioned, with Chilwell. And then when he got injured, that just completely fell apart because we're using Marcus Alonso, who is kind of the antithesis to Chilwell's dynamism and kind of the attacking thrust that he brings. And then we're using Saúl Ñíguez as a left wing back. We're using Malang Sarr as a left back in a back four. We're just kind of stuck. And yeah, I think another reason is our midfield is still relatively weak compared to City and Liverpool. I think that was the area that needed to be strengthened the most in the summer. And we prioritized Lukaku, and that is, you know, we can see that clearly now, that it was a poor decision to do that. I think N'Golo Kante is still on his day pretty superhuman, but his day is becoming less and less common. Like he's getting injured a lot. He's not, and when he does play, he only really turns up in the big games, which is sad to see. But I hope we keep him despite that, because when he is on his game, he is superhuman, as I said. But I think, yeah, Jorginho, Kovacic has been very good this season, actually, but also injured quite a lot. And Jorginho, I think I talked about him a bit last time I was on here. I'm not his biggest fan. I think he leaves a lot to be desired in terms of ball progression and kind of combativeness and just defensive solidity. But I think we're not as far off City and Liverpool as it may seem. I think when we've got Chilwell back, although having said that, with Rudiger now leaving and Christensen too, most likely, it does all of a sudden become harder. And that, as I previously mentioned, is down to failings from the board. We simply shouldn't have let Tomori and Mark Gerhi go. And we're now suffering as a result of that. But yeah. Succession planning is always something that you can talk about with hindsight, but I think in this case I was talking about it at the time, so I'm confident to say that this is a pretty clear error from Chelsea. But I mean, I'm not sure if we're really seeing the kind of the results of that yet. I think this season has been more that Chelsea have been just a victim of kind of injuries at the wrong time and just inconsistency, really.
Well, let's try and talk about the positive aspects of Chelsea, because it hasn't been a complete disaster of a season. So who are the players who've really stood out for you this season?
Well, I think player of the season has probably been Rudiger. Although he's leaving, he has been really immense. I mean, I do think that he is someone who massively profits from playing in a back three. And I think if he plays in the back four at Real Madrid, he won't be as good. If Tuchel decides to at some point switch to back four permanently, he also won't be as good. So in that sense, I think it's not as bad as some people think that he's leaving. But you know, despite that, he has obviously been playing in the back three this season, and he's been incredible. He's been really kind of, and it's not just what he does on the ball or in his defensive duels or whatever. He brings this kind of intensity that kind of all the other players have to match. And that kind of intensity especially next to the kind of insane level of calmness that Thiago Silva brings, is a really nice mix. Mason Mount, as I said, has been our most consistent and best attacker. He's both our highest goal scorer and our highest assister. I think I've not got the numbers to hand, but I think he is close to, it's possible that he'll end the season with over 10 of each in the league, which is really, really impressive. But I do think that that's come at a slight dip in overall performance level compared to last season from him. And that's a trade-off that as he continues to develop will have to be kind of looked at and thought and discussed between him and coaches, whether that's that trade-off is worth it. Reece James has been excellent again, playing both right wing back and right centre back, but also injured for quite a long period. But yeah, I think it's clear to see that the core of this team as it moves forward is very much one of youth. Even despite the departures of the likes of Abraham and Tomori, there's still Mount and James as two of the team's best and most consistent performers. There are more coming through. There are more out on loan who will come back, like Conor Gallagher, like Billy Gilmore. And yeah, it's very much still, I think, an upwards trajectory for Chelsea under Tuchel, despite the slight dip compared to last season.
Well, let's talk about the game that is going to be happening midweek. I should caveat this by saying Leeds have a game against Arsenal before this game against Chelsea happens. And you will have a game as well coming up, no doubt. But this will be the first time that Chelsea have played against the Jesse Marsh team. So how are you feeling about playing against a sort of intense Red Bull, pressy, quick transitions through the middle type of team?
I'm quite excited actually to see how it pans out, because I mean, apart from Liverpool and I guess you could argue Southampton, I don't think we've really come up against a team in that mould under Tuchel. And obviously Liverpool it's not really a comparison because of the kind of overall and individual quality they have, but Southampton we kind of under Tuchel have always done very, very well against. And I think Timo Werner has scored about 90% of his Premier League goals against Southampton. I mean, it is his like best performance of the season every time. And that was the case under Lampard as well. So he, you know, obviously he likes playing against high lines. That's clear to see. But I think it does kind of extend a bit further than that players like Werner are very much accustomed to kind of quick counter pressing, to making the most of transitions, and it's not just about the spacing behind. But yeah, I do think we could be vulnerable if Marsh gets it right, because despite what is said about press resistance, it is true that the likes of Jorginho, Kovacic, even Thiago Silva at times, in fact, any player in our back three recently we've been very prone to defensive errors. So that's been Azpilicueta, Silva, Christensen, Alonso too. And obviously high pressure on them is going to make them more prone to that. And I think if Marsh gets it right and doesn't enable Chelsea to kind of completely control the game, as we saw in the last Chelsea Leeds matchup when Bielsa was manager, I think Leeds could find some joy there. But if Chelsea are able to control the game in the way Tuchel wants, I think Marsh won't be able to implement his pressing game really at all, because it will just be kind of aimlessly chasing after the ball. They'll have to have some kind of more rigid defensive structure.
In terms of injuries and suspensions, obviously there's a game that's going to happen between this, but as of now, are you aware of any players who'll be missing?
Yeah, so obviously Ben Chilwell's got the long-term injury. Callum Hudson-Odoi has just come back to training after being out for a couple of months, so he might make the game, but it's not that likely. Lukaku has been out recently with a minor injury, but he'll probably be back. And I think that is it in terms of absences. I don't think I'm missing anyone else.
Would you like to hazard a guess at a lineup?
Well, a lot of it depends on who plays against Wolves and how well. But if I were to just, instead of guessing what I think it might be, I'll say what I'd like to see, because I think that's more fun. obviously, Edouard Mendy in goal. I would have Rudiger, Silva and Trevor Chalobah as the back three. Trevor Chalobah has not played as much recently, but overall over the course of the whole season has been one of our more positive players this season. It's been really good to see his breakout. In midfield two, I will go for I think it's quite likely we see Ruben Loftus-Cheek, given his ability to play through the press and kind of physical ability on the ball as well. So probably him alongside Mateo Kovacic, I think we might see. Left wing back Marcus Alonso, right wing back Reece James, front three Mason Mount, Kai Havertz, and yeah, I've got no idea. I'll say Christian Pulisic because he is for, well, no, it could be anyone. It could be him, Ziyech, Werner. No, it'll probably be Werner given Marsh's style, yeah.
And I never ask for predictions on this podcast, but I am interested in where you think the game will be won or lost. So how would you answer that question?
I think a lot depends on how much Chelsea's, or to what extent Chelsea's wing-backs can get involved in the final third. We were talking, or you actually said earlier, that Chelsea are really good at progressing the ball, but then when they get into the final third, things kind of peter out a bit, or the players look a bit lost. And I think a lot of that is because teams are quite wise in how they limit the progression of the wing-backs into the final third, and also coming in kind of more infield. But if Reece James and Marcus Alonso are able to kind of have more attacking freedom, then they will. I think Chelsea will be successful. But in the same sense, if Leeds are able to nullify that and then get back at Chelsea like on the flanks, then Chelsea could be in trouble, because there have been gaps opening up in recent games between the wing back and the wide centre back.
Cool. Well, Orlando, it's always great having you on. What's the best way for our listeners to catch what you're putting out?
Everything you can find through my Twitter handle, which is, I never know how to say this out loud. It's at Orlandinho, but the first O is a zero and the I is a one. I should probably find a better way of doing that. But yeah, if you just search Orlando, it'll probably come up. But yeah, again, thank you very, very much for having me on, John. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, and it's always great having you on. So thank you so much for coming on.
Okay, so lots of interesting bits and pieces there, and lots to worry us, and some vague spots of hope if you choose to observe them. Okay, so in terms of structure, it's pretty clear that Chelsea will probably play a 3-4-3. So, John, Chelsea are a slightly more defensive team than maybe City or Arsenal, as Orlando says. So how do you expect Leeds to set up in terms of shape in this game?
Well, as we've just talked about in the final question from the interrogation, I guess the big question is, like, what is the possible formations that we can play? I think that the 3-4-3, the benefit of that is that it allows us to bring in players that we have available, insofar as we can play a back three of Strauch, Llorente, Cork, if we need to. And that gives us sort of decent level starting players in each of those positions. The question then becomes, like, who you're going to play in your wing-back positions. But I feel as though, in terms of wing-backs, on the right, we have a much better option than playing a left-back a right-back in a back four, who would probably be a centre-back as well. So either Llorente or Robin Koch. So, yeah, I think you can get away with playing centre-backs as full-backs in a Marsh system. So it could well be the case that we do see a back four with a centre-back playing one of those full-back roles. But I also do think that the 3-4-3 does allow us to sort of get more senior players in the positions that you might want them to do. So I think that maybe is going to be playing at the back of Jesse Marsh's mind as he plans for this one. In terms of the structural side of things, I'm a little bit nervous about 3-4-3 versus 3-4-3, especially in a game where you want to get points, because I do think these games can just end up being really claggy because you end up going man for man across the field. And we've seen that man for man against Chelsea, we're not going to come off particularly well in those sorts of games. So I do think that's maybe something to have a think about. Although, having said that, I do think that if we do go 3-4-3 against Chelsea, we will end up going with a back five until we're down, which is, yeah, maybe a negative way of looking at it. But again, it might just allow us to sit in and be a little bit more solid. It all depends on how Jesse Marsh views Chelsea, because obviously with City he was just super happy to be sitting in and trying to clag them out. He may be a little bit more adventurous against Chelsea because of their run of results recently.
I personally would go 4-2-3-1 because I think it's the formation that's probably worked better for us in terms of going forward. I'd be interested to see what happens with this one. Although I guess again that does leave you with the risk of maybe being a little bit more open in those wide areas, and obviously Chelsea used their wing backs to try and generate a lot of their progression and chance creation as well. So.
Okay, so Adam, at the moment it's just about trying to find a vaguely logical team from the available bodies, isn't it?
It is a little bit, yeah. And as John said, maybe at right back the option is to play a centre back there because it's not too important in a Marsh system, but we could see return of the Shaq. And I think that might be the best thing to do because I don't think we have another option in the squad for the right back role that is a natural or more natural right back. I want to note here that Drame can't play for us again this season because his loan ends on June the 30th. And there were a few questions about this that we got online and within the Discord. That's not something we can sort of John Kevin Augustin loophole our way out of and find a recognisable right back at the club. It's got to be Jamie Shackleton for me, or sort of Diego Llorente maybe if we're playing four at the back. So if you want me to have a stab at doing a team, Darren, I'd probably
go on, have a stab at doing the team. Good luck.
I'd probably go Ilan, obviously in goal, Ilan Melier, Shackleton at right back. It's going to have to be Firpo at left back because we don't have another option other than maybe Pascal, but I don't think that'll happen. I'd prefer a left and a right footer at centre-back, so I'd go Pascal and then one of Koch or Llorente. I'd prefer Koch, but if it's Llorente, so be it. Phillips and Click in midfield in the pivot. Rodrigo back in the 10, Harrison on the left, Rafinha on the right, and then I suppose I feel bad for him because he should have maybe given more of a chance against Arsenal in Joe Gellhart, but I think it'll be Dan James up front. And that's probably what I would go with and what I would say is probably best right now, but bringing Shaq in when he's barely played the season feels a little bit risky as well.
But he is a fine young man. John, what do you... any advances on what Adam just proposed, or shall we move on?
I mean, I'm happy to accept Adam's team. I would say, though, that Jesse Marsh does seem to be entering that phase of managerial panic where it's kind of hard to read what he's going to put out. Like, none of us expected to see Dan James as a 10 yesterday, for example. And it feels as though there's, like, so much tweaking around going on now that he's just sort of in that headspace that managers get into usually at the end of their careers or 10 years at a side, where they're just desperate to make things work and they think the only way to do that is by playing around with the formula. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some strange selections on Wednesday.
Oh, that's something to look forward to. Okay, let's think about the tactical questions a little bit. So John, Chelsea may be one of the teams we could theoretically press a bit. So do you expect us to sit and try and nick something, or do you think we'll try and get on the front foot and play with an intense press and try and create some chaos for them?
I think the pressing is so dependent on the possession that the big question has got to be whether or not we can progress the ball into areas where we can press. It just feels like so long since we've played a game where it felt as though there was any point doing a proper counter press, because we've just not managed to really do it. And even yesterday when we got a few, like we had maybe two or three forays into the opposition half where it looked like it could be dangerous, when we lost the ball by playing it beyond the striker into Ramsdale. So you have no option there of being able to counter press. So for me, if we are able to sort of possess the ball and progress it into those areas, then perhaps we could get to them. But at the moment, it just feels as though when we go forward, we just cede possession back straight away. So we're doing our high press because the opposition have the ball. They play it through our high press, we get the ball, and then we just give it straight back to them. And that's the issue. The issue is that if a big part of your attacking play is through generating counter-pressing situations from which you can counter-attack, if you're not able to get the ball and your team into those areas and structures that are optimal for those sorts of attacking counter moments, you're just not going to be able to do anything. So yeah, for me, a lot of this will come down to, is this going to be a game where we actually manage to possess the ball in some sort of meaningful way in the opposition half? And if not, then yeah, I think I see it being similar to the last few games, which is give the ball back to the opponent, wait for them to attack us, hopefully absorb the pressure and rotate like that. And like I said yesterday, the only chances that we had were through set pieces, and
I think the best chances that we had, even the best chances that we had to maybe even be threatening, a few of them were from us like winning a set piece and then winning a free kick further up the field, sort of gaining territory through set pieces as well, which is just not ideal at the moment.
I agree. Adam, as we've touched on, there is a narrative which still exists at Leeds of, scare quotes, tightened up. But per XG, the opposition have outcreated us in the last five games, including the Watford win, where we won 3-0. So up against another big team, how do you expect us to look defensively in this game?
I don't want to be too negative, Darren, but I don't see it changing too much. I don't think any of us here are expecting us to suddenly out XG Chelsea, probably likely to get out XG'd again. And then it's going to come down to, well, can we ride our luck enough? Can we variance this enough and maybe nick something, maybe a point, maybe even all three if we get lucky enough? We've created two of our best chances in the Arsenal game through set pieces. Perhaps maybe that's another area we'll try and exploit. But in terms of defensively, I think they'll have most of the ball and they'll dominate the game. And it'll be about whether we can then get the ball forward, either to attack ourselves or to counter press if we do lose it back enough. But like John said, we never seem to be in situations where we get the ball forward and then we lose it and then we're able to actually counter press. It feels like the ball just comes straight back at us and they can play through us, and that is a concern for me. But I do want to give a shout out to my good friend Sam. He's a big Chelsea fan and he's convinced that they will somehow drop points given just how they're playing at the moment, and they haven't been in the best form in the last two games. They've thrown away points. They have the FA Cup final to look forward to on Sunday. There's a possibility that maybe they rest some players. Maybe, if I'm being positive, a slightly weakened Chelsea might have an off day, maybe be off colour, and we can maybe hit them with a goal and get something from the game. But it was interesting to note what Orlando said about Timo Werner and how he's played against the likes of Southampton in the past, and how that's usually been one of his best games of the season. So are we suddenly going to give Werner a load of goals and to add to his small tally in the Premier League? It's possible. I don't know. I'm just sort of a little bit worried about how this game's going to go, even though I think it's a slightly easier game than the Arsenal one. I think there's a lot of ways they can hurt us. And I don't know, if Reece James is playing and he plays well, then he's someone that I always worry about. And we've been killed wide a lot under Marsh, and he's one of the best at delivering the ball from a wide area in world football. So, you know, there's reasons to be negative in that sense as well. And even Romelu Lukaku's managed to score a couple of goals against Wolves. Will he start? Will his confidence be up? Possibly. And then it could again be just a really difficult game for us.
Can I just check whether your friend Sam's watched us at all?
He has, actually. He likes to gloat. So I have played that point against him and countered him with it, and he's still not having any of it. He still thinks we might get a draw.
I am contractually obliged to mention the wing-backs and the width and the fact that that might kill us, but Adam's already touched on that, John, so I'm going to skip it and not come to you with that question, because I think we all agree that that is definitely something that we need to be worried about, and there are going to be lots of threats there. So I'm not going to make you talk about that. I'm going to ask you to talk instead about our struggles in possession a little bit more, because we haven't talked about that enough in this podcast. Chelsea are usually pretty solid. We struggle in possession. We struggle to create chances. So, John, come on. How are we going to create any chances in this game, and where do you expect us to create any problems for them? Or is it just a case of trying to scab set pieces as it's been in yesterday's game?
Yeah, but even scabbing set pieces, like Chelsea play a back three of three extremely solid aerial defenders, so make of that what you will. But for me, everyone's looking at this game against Chelsea and saying, well, they're playing badly at the moment. They lost to Everton, they drew with Wolves after being 2-0 up. They're very gettable at. I agree on the face of it, but I do think that there's certain things about Chelsea that make it more difficult for us, and not least the fact that, at least in a defensive sense, they are gonna look to overload in the middle and force teams wide and force them to cross the ball in and generate chances from there, which already is a nightmare for us, I think, as a prospect. Given that we are supposedly attacking directly through the middle and looking to be quick and sort of get defenses running backwards and cause chaos in that way. I don't think that we'll see Chelsea committing a huge amount of players forward from the middle and the central areas. So part of the reason why they use wing-backs is because they're happy to cede space in the wide areas, but they'll sit a little bit more solidly in the middle. So there's that as well. I suppose the big question for me is whether or not we're actually going to get anything out of this game going forward. I can see Chelsea struggling against us, because I think the problems that Chelsea have are in the final third. I mentioned that in the interview with Orlando. I think Chelsea are very good at progressing the ball. When it gets to the final third, they just don't seem to have the sorts of rotations and movements and interchanges at the moment to cause teams problems. I'm just much less hopeful that we will be able to cause them problems at the other end. So yeah, you know, again, as Adam says, maybe we could grab a 0-0 draw, and at that, at, you know, at this point in the season, that goes a long way towards potentially keeping you up. So it is good that Chelsea are struggling at the moment. It's good that they have the FA Cup final coming up. It's good that they may rotate things. It's, you know, there's positives to look to. But looking at it from a purely tactical sense, I don't necessarily get the, and I've said this as well, I don't get why people think that Arsenal was going to be harder than Chelsea, when I feel like Arsenal are probably more gettable at in their final form than Chelsea are. So yeah, it's an interesting one, certainly.
It sure is. Okay, so Adam, where will the excuse me, Adam, where will the game be won or lost?
Well, one area for them of potential weakness is left wing back. I think right wing back will probably be quite strong, but left wing back might be Sol Neguez. If we are playing Rafinha down the right, I know we don't necessarily always attack with width these days, but if he can get at him, that would be nice. That's one area. But there's also the sort of bigger picture, which is that for basically the last 10 games now, we've been saying the same thing. It's about how we attack centrally versus how they attack wide. And I think John said it in the interview actually as well. Can we create enough chances through the middle of Chelsea and we get the ball into the right areas to do that? Or will they kill us on the other end of things with the wing backs, which is obviously their strong point? And right now, if you offered me a point and said that we get that, I'd take it, because that would be absolutely wonderful for us. I think there's a chance that Burnley don't get anything this season, so if we can get one point in the next three games, then we have a chance to stay up. But at the same time, it would be great to try and nick this if we can. And I am, like I said, still concerned about what they might do to us out wide, and they might absolutely kill us. But I am more confident, I have to say, with Marsh than Bielsa in this game, because every time we've played Chelsea, except maybe this season's game at Stamford Bridge, I think they've absolutely killed us, and we've not been able to pass the ball out at all. Whereas I'm not worried about that anymore. We might not be able to pass the ball out, but as long as we get the ball into some good areas, we might be able to score. So yeah, maybe central compactness, and if we can keep it tight there, create some chances there, or through set pieces, we might be able to nick something. That's probably where the game might be won or lost, or drawn, but yeah.
Any advances, John?
If we can score, we might have a chance. That's my worry, scoring against Chelsea, not necessarily them scoring against us.
Fair point. Okay, excellent. So, I don't think... Is Hobbsy going to do a video on a play? Because he was swinging yesterday in the group chat, wasn't he? He was thinking, oh, I'm not going to do anything. And then he's going, oh, maybe Lewis Bate's done a couple of good passes. Maybe I'll do something on Lewis Bate. But I think he's going to do Joseph Mateo this week instead. So that's something to look out for. John, are you doing a tactical video this week, or are you giving yourself a week off?
Yeah, I think we're at a point where there's a flurry of games, and there wasn't really much to talk about tactically from the last one. So I think we'll wait and hold out and see whether or not we can do anything worth talking about after the Chelsea game.
Fabulous. So we'll be back on Thursday with a review of the Chelsea match and a preview of the Brighton match, I assume. So until then, listeners, try and enjoy the game and have a great week.
Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.